Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. And you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org. Today is February 13th, 2019. The markets were up today, the Dow closing at 25,543, the NASDAQ at 7,420, and the S&P at 2,753. Our topic tonight is listeners' questions. In particular, this is usually the time of year, tax season, that we focus on listeners' tax questions. So if you have tax questions, you're welcome to give us a call. We are live tonight. We will take your questions. Lori C. is in the studio with us this evening. She'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so we can hear you without the delay and we can talk without confusion. If you do not want to talk live on air, just give your question to Lori. She'll write it down and she'll bring it in to me and I'll do my best to answer it. We do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. While I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic. I'll do my best to answer them. The number is 610-758-8810. That is 610-758-8810. An email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. I did have a question come in through the website that I will I answered directly, but I thought it was still a good question and one that I could address here. Let me see if I can find where I put it. If not, I can just remember. So the question was, someone had left a job in another state, you know, after several years of service, moved to Pennsylvania, and they had a pension with the company, and they started taking their pension, but pre-age 65, the, you know, plan allowed it. So it was a reduced payment because they took it earlier than normal retirement, but started taking it, you know, after age 59 and a half, age 60 or so. And they are working and they switched software that they were using. And the software they had used before, they would enter the information from the 1099-R. That's where we report pensions. And the 1099-R reflected the pension amount. They entered into the software. No problem. Wasn't taxable to Pennsylvania because Pennsylvania doesn't tax, you know, pensions that are normal distributions. Well, he switched to a new software and there was a flag that was raised that, you know, questioned whether it was tax-free for Pennsylvania. And it reminded me that from time to time, we do see pensions that are reported on a 1099-R that might have a code that would cause a flag. So, for example, normal retirement for whatever plan someone might be receiving their pension from would include a code in box 7 that is code 7, which says normal distribution. A normal distribution from a pension, not taxable to Pennsylvania. Occasionally, it will have a code 2, which is early distribution, but known exception applies. So there's no penalty for this person receiving a pension prior to their normal retirement age. There is an exception that applies, and that too is not taxable for Pennsylvania. So if you get any of these error codes when you're entering your information in software, whether it's, you know, free online software or your own software that you purchase through, you know, a local supply store, you want to make sure that you're careful about the codes you're entering in that input. They do mean something. So based on this person's circumstances, I think it might have just been a flag for the software as a caution because their age was under age 65, perhaps. Maybe the code was 2. So I expect that once they reviewed those codes or understood that it was just a caution, it should not come over as taxable on Pennsylvania. All right. So usually you would see that on, there's a schedule in Pennsylvania called a W-2C, and that generally will show your wages that you've input from your W-2s or the income that you've entered from a 1099-R. And a 1099-R, in my mind, I just say R's for retirement. 1099-R could be pension, could be a distribution from a 401k, IRA, that kind of thing. So that's how I think of it. R is kind of retirement. All right. It could be an annuity as well. So that was a question that came through the website. So thank you for sending that in. If you have questions tonight, you can talk live on air with us. If you're not comfortable talking live on air, just call and give your question to Lori. But the number to call is 610-758-8810. And that's what the topic is tonight. Listeners' questions, listeners' tax questions as well. So I did request from colleagues of mine the kinds of questions that they are getting for tax season. And because we had some tax changes this year with tax reform, some of those folks are more interested in knowing how things have changed or what do certain phrases mean. So I got some questions from my colleagues, Jess and May and Mike and Rod. So I thought I'd share some of those with you as we're going through the show. One of the questions was, what does the SALT mean? S-A-L-T. What does that mean? You would hear people talking about it during the tax questions or the tax discussions when they were going through tax reform. And it's the state and local taxes. What happened for the tax reform is generally people take either a standard deduction or they itemize their deductions. And you only itemize the deductions if they would be more than the standard deduction. In tax reform, they doubled the standard deduction, so made it twice as much as it was, basically, from the prior year. And they took away some deductions or limited some other deductions that we would ordinarily have had we itemized. One of those deductions that was modified, if we were to itemize, which is a Schedule A, is a tax deduction. So prior to 2018, we could get a deduction for state and local taxes that we pay through our payroll. So they're income taxes that we're paying to our state and local governments. So that would be a deduction. Real estate taxes that we have for homeownership would be a deduction. There's a few other taxes that may come into play there too, but basically, most people were taking the real estate taxes and their state and local tax as a deduction on Schedule A. In tax reform, because they doubled the standard deduction, they capped the amount of taxes that we could deduct. They capped it at $10,000. And what's really interesting, if you think about it, it's capped at $10,000 for single filers, head of household filers, and married filing joint filers. It's all the same cap. If you imagine that a single person has, you know, their income and maybe they live in a reasonably sized house, a married filing joint couple may have a larger house, they may have a family, they may have children, and they may be dual income. So just logically, you would think that the cap would be higher for married filing joint, but they didn't do that. So when you cap it at $10,000, and you've doubled the standard deduction, which for married filing joint is $24,000 for people under 65, you need $14,000 of other deductions in order to even begin to itemize. Those other deductions that are basically available would be mortgage interest. So a homeowner might have some mortgage interest. That makes sense. And charitable contributions. if they don't add up to $14,000, and for a lot of people it doesn't, then you're not itemizing any longer. So that's going to come into another question that we got a lot as to, you know, why is my refund less than last year? So let me close the loop on this state and local tax deduction. So that is capped. For certain people who were really in a high income bracket anyway in prior years, if you were subject to alternative minimum tax, you didn't get those deductions anyway. So it's not really going to impact you because you weren't getting them under the alternative minimum tax regimen or whatever the word is. Anyway, and speaking of alternative minimum tax, they did raise the thresholds and the preference items, which used to be those very taxes, you know, because it was capped at 10,000, it's not coming into play as much. So we're probably not going to have as many people subject to alternative minimum tax because of the changes in the deductions. The other deduction they took away for itemizing Schedule A are miscellaneous itemized deductions. So people, I've run over Shandi. I realize I'm so into talking about taxes. I've gone over my first break. But the miscellaneous itemized deductions, which I'll cover when I come back from this first break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
WDIY offers many choices and real voices.
This is Steve Aronson. Join me and our other folk music hosts each weekday evening from 7 to 9 for a great mix of classic folk, bluegrass and old-time, Celtic, blues, and contemporary songwriters, plus interviews, concert information, archived concerts, and more.
WDIY is the Lehigh Valley's local source for NPR news, public affairs, and diverse music at 88.1 FM and streaming on WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. We're talking about listeners' tax questions this evening, or listeners' questions in general. If you have any, you're welcome to call in and talk live on air with us at 610-758-8810. If you're not comfortable talking live on air, you can still call that number, 610-758-8810, and give your question to Lori, and she'll write it down and bring it in to me, or send questions through the website yourfinancialchoices.com. I won't answer those tonight. I'll answer those a little later, the ones through the email. All right. So Schedule A, itemized deductions, the miscellaneous deductions went away. That with things like your safe deposit boxes, your investment journals, unreimbursed employee business expenses, tax preparation fees, investment management fees. Miscellaneous deductions gone. Medical deductions. So, you know, if you really have a ton of medical, this could help throw you over the threshold for itemizing. In 2018, the threshold is 7.5% of your page one income, basically. So you take your total income times 7.5%. Whatever is over that amount would be added to your other Schedule A itemized deduction, so you may be able to itemize. That's a pretty big hurdle already, the 7.5%. In 2019, that hurdle is going to 10% of your AGI. So we're going to see probably fewer and fewer people eligible to claim the medical deductions. Really, the flag there for you is think about 7.5% of your AGI combined with your real estate taxes, state and local taxes, and charitable contributions, and maybe mortgage interest. If they together are over the standard deduction of $12,000 single or $24,000 married filing joint, you may be able to itemize. Some people will bunch their expenses into one year versus another to see if they can, you know, kind of take advantage of getting a deduction one year, but maybe not the next. We have worked on that with using donor advised funds for charitable giving. Maybe we have, you know, someone who wants to do charitable giving 5 years worth. They have the means, the cash flow, the assets. We can dump 5 years worth of charitable giving in a donor advised fund, and then the donor actually funds their gifts out of that fund over the next several years. All right, we had a call come in, which I'll take when we get back from this next break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
WDIY offers many choices and real voices.
This is Steve Aronson. Join me and our other folk music hosts each weekday evening from 7 to 9 for a great mix of classic folk, bluegrass and old time, Celtic, blues, and contemporary songwriters. Plus, interviews, concert information, archived concerts, and more.
WDIY is the Lehigh Valley's local source for NPR news, public affairs, and diverse music at 88.1 FM and streaming on WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. We are taking listeners' tax questions this evening. If you have any, the phone number is 610-758-8810, and you can talk live on air with us or give your question to Lori. She'll write it down and bring it in, as she did for Ricky. Ricky called in. She owns her home with her husband. She wants to know, what are the laws or rules regarding renting out rooms while still living in the home? Is it like Airbnb? Ricky, I'm going to tell you, it can get very complicated with renting, period. Renting anyway, you know, there are a lot of rules around renting. I have a textbook in front of me, and basically there is a flow chart that we would use as tax preparers to kind of help a client go through the navigation of this. And basically you say, you know, was the home used for personal use? Yes, because you're living in it. So it would be yes. Did you rent it less than 15 days? If you rented it less than 15 days, Ricky, there's a nice little provision in the tax code that says if we rent some room or our house for less than 2 weeks, we don't have to report any of the income. That is like, wow, that's really great, especially when there are maybe a big event in the area, the Olympics come to town, or Music Fest is here, and you only rent it for less than 15 days, you don't have to report anything. But let's say that's not the case, and you're going to rent it longer, but you're maybe taking in, you know, a grad student or something for a year or 2 years, something like a regular rental, a regular, you know, long-term rental. Then what happens is you have to separate the cost, basically, and you generally would do this by like the square footage of the area that you're renting versus not. So you would treat the family home part as, you know, your regular home, and then you prorate expenses between personal and rental use. You deduct the personal portion of the mortgage interest, the real estate taxes on Schedule A, as we talked about. So you may or may not be able to itemize if they're not over those thresholds, but that's the personal portion. Then the rental portion of interest, the mortgage interest, the real estate taxes are not limited to the rental income. But other rental deductions are limited to remaining gross income from the property and are subject to ordering rules. So when I talk about ordering rules, all of a sudden we're getting more complicated, and it's probably too complicated for the show. But you would be able to deduct certain of the expenses for sure, because they would be deducted anyway on Schedule A. So the rental portion could be against rental income, but not limited to income. But some of the additional deductions you may have, like utilities or homeowners insurance, those could be capped. There's ordering rules. And then there could be depreciation on that piece of the rental as well. You mentioned Airbnb. If you have Airbnb, that's a different animal, because now you're talking about more what they're calling like hotel occupancy And that could be subject to hotel tax, sales tax, a whole different can of worms, and much more complicated. So if you want to do Airbnb, do your homework on that. It could be very fruitful for you. There's a lot of different things you can do, but you need to understand the rules. But it is very different than a long-term rental of like a room in your home to you know, a student or a neighbor or friend or something like that. Very different than Airbnb. Okay, Ricky, so I hope that helped a bit. Folks, we're at our second break, and if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert, and you are listening to Your Financial Choices. If you have questions this evening, we're taking listeners' tax questions. The phone number is 610-758-8810, and you can talk live on air or off air, whatever you're more comfortable doing. We talked briefly about what SALT was, state and local taxes, and the cap on those, which also is subject to the real estate taxes. Some states, I think, are still allowing certain itemized deductions, and I'm not going to kind of cover that tonight, but I would say that if you're in a different state that does allow itemized deductions, you want to make sure that you kind of go through all of the questions. Don't assume because you're not going to do it for federal that wouldn't help you for state. All right. So just be careful about that. Another question, why is my refund less than last year? So everyone's heard about the big Twitter storms about, you know, I'm paying so much more taxes and they weren't expecting it. What happened is they changed the withholding tables like in February of 2018. So when they knew that the tax rates were going down, they changed the withholding tables. The idea was a lot of people would have less withheld because the tax rates changed. They went lower. And the idea was that people would have more in their paycheck during the year of 2018. So that all sounds great, and that could have worked out for some people, but now maybe they weren't withholding as much, so maybe they didn't have as big of a refund as they had anticipated. I think the big shocker was really for people who may have itemized in the past because of large real estate and or state and local tax deductions and miscellaneous itemized deductions that they may have been able to deduct on Schedule A if they itemized. Those all going away or being capped is where I think the big shock actually is probably going to hit. And those people might be folks who normally file a little bit later, so we may not hear the end of it yet. So for the most part, refunds are a little smaller because less was being withheld. So you kind of got some of the taxes during the year. But of course, there is a whole segment of the population that actually will pay more taxes because they don't have the same deductions that they had in the past. One question that we get is usually as we move through tax season is, how do I check the status of my refund? So a lot of people who file early and file quickly are usually the ones who are getting refunds. The people who think they're going to owe taxes usually don't worry about filing too quickly. So if you are one of those people who've already filed and you're waiting for your refund, there is a way to check the status of your refund. It's very easy. You just go on the IRS's website, irs.gov. Usually there's a button right when you go there to the first page that says check on my refund. What you're going to need is your social security number or your ITIN. and your filing status and the exact amount of your refund. So when you have that, you can check the status of your refund. It'll tell you, yes, the return's been processed. Expect your refund in, 10 days or 12 days, whatever it might be. Or, it's still being processed. One thing I will mention about filing early, the IRS does encourage people to file early to thwart those folks who may try to file a tax return fraudulently using your Social Security number. So it's kind of like whoever gets to file first. So if you're the actual taxpayer and you file your return, it's great. And someone tries to steal your identity and file a tax return. If you've already done it, they're, left out. However, if someone has kind of taken your identity and is trying to file a tax return using your information and you haven't filed yet, the IRS may or may not catch that. So on occasion, if it just seems a little bit too absurd or out of the ordinary, the IRS may catch those kinds of returns and flag it and then alert you that there is a possibility that your identity was stolen. And then they're going to provide basically a security code to you to file your return after that. And I believe it's generally, and I'm because I've only had this happen once, I think we had to file a paper return after the fact. And they don't follow up with you and tell you what happened or if they caught the bad guy or anything like that. It's just, they alert you someone tried to file. So the IRS will and does recommend that people file as soon as you can. So as soon as you have your information. A lot of us are waiting for information. If you have investments, the 1099s may just now be rolling out. It used to be they had to be filed by January 31st, but because so often they had to be amended or corrected, the IRS allowed a lot of the fund companies to extend that reporting periods to avoid having to do all those corrected 1099s. And I frankly think that makes more sense. But sometimes you just have to wait a little longer. The other thing I want to mention about refund, like where is my refund? If you file electronically, number one, that's going to go faster. But number two, if you file and do direct deposit, that also is going to go much, much faster than waiting for a paper check. So on occasion, I do have people who say they prefer the paper check. I'm not sure why. If it's they're worried about the IRS having their bank information, the IRS probably already has your bank information or could access it. So don't let that keep you from doing it. It is kind of safe. You don't have a check waiting in your mailbox that someone else could intervene and get from you. So direct deposit is pretty safe. And you just need your banking information when you're filing your return. So electronic filing and direct deposit really is, the fastest way to get those refunds. But you can still check online through that Where's My Refund on the IRS.gov website. Even if you have done direct deposit, it will tell you what to do. Sometimes people will say, I owe a lot of money. Do I have to pay? No, they'll say, do I have to pay? Of course you have to pay. But do I have to pay now? Are there payment plans? How do the payment plans work? There are a number of payment plans available. When I get back from this middle break, I'll kind of just give you some big highlights. But most importantly to know is if you think you can't pay, it is very, very important to still file your return because the IRS will assess penalties and interest on any number of situations. They can assess a penalty on failure to file, failure to pay, failure to pay enough. So you want to mitigate as many penalties as you can. And if you can avoid the penalty for late filing simply by either filing your return or filing for an extension, you certainly want to do that. But a filing for an extension is not an extension of time to pay. Okay, we always need to make sure we're paying. So if you can't, I'll talk about that when we come back from this next break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8255. 8810. We're taking listeners' tax questions tonight, and you can talk live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, give your question to Lori C. She'll write it down and bring it in to me. And again, that number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
WDIY 88.1, it's 6:30. Your current temperature is 35. Tonight, low around 25. Thursday is going to be mostly sunny with a high near 41. Thursday night, a slight chance of showers after 1 a.m. Mostly cloudy with a low around 34. Friday, a chance of showers, mostly cloudy with a high near 50. Friday night, we're going to have a slight chance of rain and snow between 10 p.m. and 1 a.m. Then a slight chance of snow after 1 a.m., low around 30 degrees. Saturday, a chance of snow, mostly cloudy with the high near 34. Saturday night, partly cloudy with a low around 21. Sunday, a chance of snow, mostly cloudy with the high near 33. And for your Sunday night, a chance of rain and snow, mostly cloudy with a low around 21. Now back to your financial choices with Lori Siebert.
Thank you, Shondi. Folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810, and you can also submit questions through yourfinancialchoices.com. So let me quickly talk about you owe money, what are you going to do? The IRS has on their website a link to understanding your payment options, and you just basically go to irs.gov. They have a box there that you can search. You know, you can type in payment plan or something like that, but basically it's irs.gov/payments to consider our online payment options. And then it's, as I mentioned, very important to at least file your return or file for an extension. Again, it's not an extension of time to pay, but the payment plans. Basically, there are short-term plans and long-term plans. Some have fees and some don't. Basically, they'd like you to pay right away, and they give you different payment options. Some people might not realize they can take it out of their checking account or use a money order or use a credit card. Now, they do mention that fees apply when paying by card, so you certainly want to think about that before you do such a thing. If you pay now using any of those methods, there is no cost and no setup fee, no future penalties or interest. If you want a short-term payment plan, 120 days or less, so 120 days or less, about 4 months or less, and you think you can pay the amount owed by automatic payments from your checking account or by check, money order, or debit or credit card, again, they say fees apply when paying by card, then there is a zero setup fee. You apply online for it. You can apply by phone for it, but penalties and interest do accrue until the balance is paid in full. Long-term payment options, if it is going to be more than 120 days, but you're going to do it through an automatic withdrawal system, again, through a debit card or checking account, then there is an ability to apply online for that, and there's a $31 fee. You could also apply by phone, mail, or in person, and there's a $107 setup fee. But there are certain, I think, arrangements that you can make if you're low income. Accrued penalties do accrue. Penalties and interest do accrue until the balance is paid. If you want a long-term payment plan, but you're not going to do it through direct debit or electronic method of payment, then there is a higher setup fee. That is also online, $149 setup fee. Low-income folks, $43 setup fee, and it may be reimbursed if certain conditions are met. And then you could also apply via phone, mail, or in person, and that is a $225 setup fee. So if you're going to try to set up a payment plan with the IRS, attempting to do it on your own online is going to save money. And if you do it within the short-term plan, which is 120 days, you're really not going to have any setup costs. So that's important. There is also an ability to restructure or reinstate an existing payment plan. So let's say you set up a payment plan for 2017 and now, whoops, 2018, you owe again and just hadn't counted on it, thought your luck was changing, it was going to get better, and it didn't, then you may have to make a change to your existing payment plan. There is an online application fee for that of $10. And again, by phone, mail, or in person, it's $89. Frankly, I never knew that there were different setup fees for those doing it online versus calling in or mailing in. And I'm not sure that's clear when you go on the website, because I have not done that. So something to think about. And then again, interest and penalties kind of all apply. So there's tons of information on their website for that, irs.gov. Additional information on payment plans is where I found that. Credits. Someone had said they've been getting questions about the credits, the renewable energy credits. So, you know, you get the new windows or you get a Energy Star door or things like that. Those credits had expired in, I think, 16, extended into 2017. Those regular residential energy credits, those are gone. What we still have is renewable energy tax credits. So under the Bipartisan Budget Act of 2018, the renewable energy tax credits for fuel cells, small wind turbines, and geothermal heat pumps now feature a gradual step down in the credit value, the same as those for solar energy systems. And it's the tax credit in service by 12/31/19 is 30%. From 2020 is 26%, 2021 is 22%, and those renewable energy tax credits expire December 31st, 2021. Existing homes and new construction qualify, and both principal residences and second homes qualify. Rentals do not qualify. So back in the past with the regular residential energy credits, those generally were just your principal residence, but these renewable energy credits apply for both your home, principal residence, and second home. More information is available on energystar.gov. So if you are interested in any of these renewable energy credits, generally they cost more, but they, if you're planning on doing it, make sure you're doing it the right way. And more information is available on that website, energystar.gov. Other questions we've had, let me mention the phone number again in case someone listening has questions. The phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. Retirement. What is a backdoor Roth and when should I do one? Backdoor Roth is something that really was not, backdoor is kind of a, it was kind of a tricky thing. A lot of people didn't know if it was going to be allowed. And what it was is sometimes people make too much money to put, to set aside money into a Roth IRA. So the IRS encourages us to put money in retirement accounts. Retirement accounts can be at work, 401ks, 403bs. They can be individual 401ks. They could be IRAs, traditional IRAs, Roth IRAs. So there's all different ways for us to save in retirement, and the IRS gives us certain incentives to do so. And the incentive for the Roth IRA is that if we put money into a Roth, we don't get a tax deduction for it, but it grows income tax-free. But there are income limits on it. So if you make, as a married filing joint couple, the phase out is between $189,000 and $199,000. If you make more than that, you're not allowed to do this regular kind of Roth. If you're single, the phase out is between $120,000 and $135,000. If you make more than that, you're not allowed to do a Roth. All right. So what could some of these people do? They wanted the benefit of the tax-free Roth. Well, the IRS has, you know, the rules for traditional IRAs. Traditional IRAs, we get a deduction, but we can only do the traditional IRA for the deduction under certain circumstances as well. But the IRS, let's say we don't qualify to do the deductible IRA. the IRS still lets us do a non-deductible IRA, meaning they don't care if we put money into an IRA account if we're working or however much money we make, but they're just not going to let us have a deduction for it. That's called the non-deductible IRA. Well, if I don't have any other IRAs and I decide to put $5,500 into a non-deductible IRA, it looks like a traditional IRA, by the way. We're just not taking the deduction on our tax return. It's called a non-deductible IRA. I have basis in that IRA then, because I didn't pay tax on that money. If a few weeks later I decide to convert that IRA to a Roth, normally when I convert IRA monies to Roth, I pay tax on the amount that was pre-tax before and any earnings. Well, in this case, I put non-deductible money into my IRA. I might have left it in cash, didn't invest it at all. So if I put $5,500 in my story and I didn't have any earnings, then I have basis of $5,500. If I convert it to a Roth, I pay zero tax on it. Now I have a $5,500 Roth when I otherwise would not have qualified for it. It's a backdoor Roth. This is where many of us were, you know, worried about encouraging clients to do that because we didn't feel that, you know, we thought it was going to come under scrutiny by the IRS because the IRS, you know, doesn't allow people to do those Roths, right? But with the tax reform, they actually addressed it. So they put credibility to it. That's called the backdoor Roth. Where it doesn't make as much sense is if someone has an IRA already. If you have had a 401k in the past and you rolled it over to an IRA, it's a rollover IRA, or maybe you put traditional IRA contributions for years when you were younger. So if you have an IRA outside of your regular retirement accounts, and let's say it's $100,000 and you want to do a $5,000 backdoor Roth, if I put $5,000 of after-tax money in my IRA, and now my IRA is worth $105,000, and I think, oh, I have $5,000 in basis. I'm going to convert that $5,000 that I just put in there. That's not how the IRS looks at it. The IRS said you're converting $5,000 of your $105,000 IRA, of which you only have basis of $5,000, and they allocate it. And in that story, I mean, I didn't do the numbers, but, you know, maybe, you know, $4,750 is going to be taxable, because they look at the total IRA you have. The IRS looks at all of your IRAs as one. All right? So you got to be careful, but that's what a backdoor Roth is. Another question. I left my employer and they paid me my 401k. Is that taxable? Well, if you left your employer and they wrote you a check, you know, for the 401k and you cashed it, that's probably going to be taxable unless it was a Roth 401k. You're going to get a 1099-R telling you what it is. But if you got a check and it was really like a mistake and you rolled it over into an IRA within 60 days, then that would not be taxable. If you roll it over right away, generally when you take money out of the 401k, you want to roll it over into an IRA. And the check would be payable to your custodian for the benefit of you to the IRA rollover. It's not taxable. But if you take the check, cash it, and you say, whoops, I didn't know, and within 60 days you put it into the Roth or into the rollover IRA, then it wouldn't be income taxable. But in that case, you still might get the 1099-R showing a distribution, and it might, you have to have the paperwork to show that you rolled it over. So you want to be careful with the 1099-R that you get if you know that you took this retirement money and rolled it over within 60 days, and it shouldn't be taxable. But if you took receipt of it and you didn't do anything else with it in 60 days, it will be taxable. And if you do it before age 59 and a half, generally, it's going to be subject to income tax and a 10% penalty. Unless you were 55 by December 31st in the year of termination from that employer, then that would not be subject to the 10% penalty, but it would be subject to income tax. Folks, we're covering some of the general questions that we get from time to time during tax season. These are questions that we've already received. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. And when I come back from this next break, I will answer Diane's question. We will be back in just a minute. Again, 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
WDIY is celebrating our birthday, and you're invited to the party. Join us for a night of live music, food, drinks, and fun to mark WDIY's 24 years in the Lehigh Valley, featuring a performance from the Large Flowerheads, paying tribute to the best music of the 1960s. Saturday, March 2nd, at the Ice House in Bethlehem. Get your tickets today at WDIY.org. We'll see you there.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on 88.1. We have podcasts of prior shows available on the website as well, and both at WDIY.org and YourFinancialChoices.com. So if you're interested in listening to any shows that we've done in the past or sharing with family members, you're welcome to direct them to those websites. Diane had called in with a question off air. Diane, this is a great question, and it happens way more than people realize. Mom passed away October 2018 at age 87. Diane and her siblings are inheriting an IRA and from mom. So mom had a named beneficiary. It's the six kids. And what happens at age 87 is mom would have had a required minimum distribution. Once you reach age 70 and a half, you have a required minimum distribution unless you're, working at, and you have a 401k, but IRAs, you have a required minimum distribution at 70 and a half. And she passed away before she took it. So in 2018, she did not take her required minimum distribution. The IRS understands this can happen. And so what they allow Diane is in 2019, the kids, if you didn't already do it in 2018, the kids will have to take mom's required minimum distribution. If you had turned it over quick enough in 2018, you could have each taken your share of that, of mom's required minimum distribution in 2018. But that's what happens. The beneficiaries will have to take the required minimum distribution. Sometimes the custodians won't, allow it to kind of switch over until everyone's figured this out. So you will all take 1/6 of what mom's required minimum distribution was for 2018. If you did not do it in 2018, you will have to do it in 2019. But in 2019, you will also have your own required minimum distribution to take. So if mom was the owner of the IRA and now you guys inherit it, it's mom's IRA for benefit of child. You will take mom's 1/6 of her RMD for 2018. And then you will have to take your own required minimum distribution, which will be a different number completely, because then it's calculated over your own life expectancy if you're the new beneficiary and it was mom's IRA. So you will have, if you did not do it in 2018, you will have two in 2019. One, mom's RMD for 2018, your 1/6 share of it, and then your own share. What the custodian would need to calculate it if they haven't calculated it already. And generally they know that number because if they were the custodian at December 31st of 2017, they know mom's age. They will know what the RMD was for 2018. You each take 1/6 of it. And then for your own, they will use the 12/31/18 balance. And then it will be over your life expectancy for 2019 for yours. Okay. So I hope that helps. And there is no penalty for that because you're going to do it soon enough. Generally, if people don't take out their distribution, there could be a 50% penalty. But in this circumstance, when it's a death, the IRS understands. The IRS actually has been very understanding when people make a mistake and forget to take it out, too. For example, sometimes we've seen where a person might switch custodians and they have it set up for automatic required minimum distribution with one custodian. They move to a new custodian and they didn't realize it didn't get it set up and they didn't take their required minimum distribution. It is required. If it's not taken, there could be a 50% penalty. But generally, if you catch it quick enough or when you catch it and you notify the custodian, you get it out, you let the IRS know, hey, this was a mistake. It was an oversight. And they'll usually waive any penalty. All right. But in this circumstance, you shouldn't have one. But Diane, that was a great question. Robert called in from Long Swamp. He's choosing repayment plans for child student loans. Loans are much higher than the child's income. My thoughts. Robert, repayment of student loans can be tricky. And if you redo them, sometimes that might cause an issue too. Because certain government student loans, if anything, God forbid, were to happen to the child, certain government student loans may be forgiven. Certain student loans may have certain attributes to them that if the child goes back to school, maybe they could go in deferment. There may be, better rates available. I did a whole show on this several years ago. It might be time to kind of revisit this. But there is a website, I believe it's SoFi. I don't know that exactly off the top of my head, but I think SoFi was a website that helps kind of restructure loans, but I do not believe they continue to be government loans. I just don't know enough about that. But if there are certain benefits too, if someone works for a nonprofit, the issue there is you have to be there 10 years. I've heard stories where people have done, in fact, I heard the story on NPR, where people have worked at a nonprofit for 10 years and then they say, no, it doesn't work. I don't know what kind of nightmare that comes from, but you just want to be careful when you're restructuring student loans. But I believe there are certain ones you can do income-based, but typically I think with the nonprofit affiliation, it's income-based for the 10 years, and then after 10 years, it's forgiven. But again, that's working for a nonprofit. So just kind of be careful about, restructuring student loans. I wish I could give you more information on that, but check out that website. I think that's what it's called, SoFi. All right, let's look at some more questions that come up. We have had clients who are getting letters from vendors where they have purchased items online. And the letter comes and says, hey, just so you know, you purchased this item online and, we didn't charge sales tax and you may be subject to this use tax in your state and you may have to report it. And then they get worried. Basically, what happens is we have sales tax that we pay for items we buy in the state where we're, purchasing something. As Pennsylvania residents, our sales tax is 6%, and there are certain sales tax that are more in certain areas like Philadelphia and Allegheny County. So Philadelphia has a higher sales tax, Allegheny County has a higher sales tax. And if you're in those areas, you're supposed to pay this sales tax. So state tax, 6%, a little bit more for Allegheny County and a little bit more for Philadelphia. So Allegheny County is 0.07 or 7% and Philadelphia is 8%. If you buy items online and they don't charge sales tax, our state still wants the sales tax. And that's when we call it a use tax. So if you get something online that says you purchased $100 worth of something and you didn't pay sales tax, there is a place on your Pennsylvania tax return to report that tax. And that is what we call a use tax. So $100, it would be $6 and you report it. Some people will say, I don't know how much, I purchased. I bought so many things and I threw away the receipts. Well, there is also a place on the tax return where you can check a box that says, just calculate it for me because I don't know what it is. And based on your income, they will kind of come up with a number that would be somewhat equivalent to what they would expect someone at your income level to buy online or out of state. If you pay that much in sales tax on your purchase out of state, so let's say you go to New York and you buy something and their sales tax, I think, is at least as much as ours, then you don't have to pay the use tax here. But if you go to a state where their sales tax is, let's say, 4% and your Pennsylvania sales tax is 6%, then you owe the difference, 2%, to Pennsylvania. So that, again, that's on page 2 of your Pennsylvania income tax return. It's called a use tax. It's basically sales tax that you did not pay on either online purchases or out of state, and you need to fess up and report those amounts. All right. Certain things, though, aren't subject to sales tax, like clothing. So I had someone ask the question because they had bought some clothing online. Well, the clothing isn't taxable, so that wouldn't be subject to use tax. But certain clothing might be, like a swimsuit. So there's certain things that are still subject to sales tax, and it's kind of hard to navigate and know all those things. I don't know if most people do know it off the top of their head. That's why that's nice where you can check that box and calculate it. But it can be quite steep. I think we looked at that for someone. They had like maybe $6 of sales tax that they are use tax that they would owe. And if we use their income calculation, I think the tax use tax would have been like $75. So just, you know, be mindful of that. Other people have asked, can I get my taxes done for free? There are some free software packages available online. You can go on the IRS's website, again, irs.gov, and look for free software. Generally, I think what happens is there's certain software that's available if you make, oh, here it is, I wrote it down, income below $66,000, free file software, file your taxes with free, easy-to-use software. Free state return options are available, but I did not see Pennsylvania and New Jersey on the drop-down list when I went to look at this. The free state return options did not include Pennsylvania or New Jersey. So that's, you know, a little, you'd have to enter it by hand somewhere, or, you know, I know that Pennsylvania used to have Telefile. I don't know if they have that anymore. I haven't looked. It's nice and convenient when you have it at the office. So income below $66,000, free, file your taxes with free, easy-to-use software. If your income is above $66,000, you must know how to do your taxes yourself. It does do your math. It offers basic guidance, and you must have your 2017 tax return, and state tax prep is not available. But I will mention that there are some free free volunteer programs that might be in the area that could help you. The Volunteer Income Tax Assistance, VITA program, offers free tax help to people who generally make $55,000 or less, or persons with disabilities or limited English speaking. And there's also a tax counseling for the elderly. And there is more information available on those options as well on irs.gov. And Lori C. just mentioned to me that Credit Karma might have some totally free tax filing software as well, and I hadn't heard about that. Someone asked me about a Social Security statement. You can get a replacement Social Security benefit statement form, which is the SSA 1099 online. But basically, I think Social Security wants you to set up the My Account application. So you have to go and, you know, answer certain privacy questions and set up My Account, and then you can get your statement and or your Social Security 1099 that way. So I think that's pretty much it. We wrapped up. Next week, I am going to be talking with Charlie Stopp about special situations and elections in inheritance tax filings. And again, that's special situations and elections in inheritance tax filings. As we go through the season, I will talk more about taxes and your tax returns as we go through. Again, questions also could be available through the website, yourfinancialchoices.com, or you can call, you know, during you know, our regular scheduled programs. It's just next week I'm going to have a special topic. But, of course, if you have questions, you're welcome to call in. So that's what we're covering. We're getting into it. Tax season's here. Tax season's starting. I also suggest to people be very organized if you're using a tax preparer to help you so that you're very efficient, very organized. It helps drive down the cost of your tax preparation. So look at your prior year tax return to use that as a guideline. Make sure you have everything that you had last year or explain why you don't have it. And if you have anything new, make sure you add that to your pile and take all the tax documents out of the envelopes. That makes a difference. One other quick item Rod Young had mentioned to me is that if you do owe money, there was a safe harbor penalty. If you've paid in at least 90% normally, they've lowered it to 85%. So that's an exception. So keep that in mind. All right, folks, coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller within the tradition folk music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices. Have a great week. And thank you, Shandi. Thank you, listeners. Love the questions. And thank you, Lori. Have a good one.